Daddy had his affairs, and I think I knew about them from the time I was 9. If he hadn't gotten careless with Charity, we wouldn't be sitting here with these 3 cats right now. Jonah was a sorry rascal, but he taught me a lot. When he hit me and left, I sat in the middle of the kitchen floor, all wadded up in a ball, and cried my eyes out. You know why? Because I'd turned my back on you. And down deep, I knew that Daddy wasn't going to bail me out of the mess. I knew what he would say before I ever went there. I'm sorry, I said. You were so trusting that you never knew about his affairs, did you? When I was a teenager, I thought you were stupid one minute and hypocritical the next. Stupid if you didn't see what he was doing. Hypocritical if you did know. Marriage is complicated, and your father's unfaithfulness wasn't anything I could prove. I guess a part of me always knew that something wasn't quite right. Looking back, I can see that the signs were there. But I never looked for proof. I guess maybe I really believed that ignorance was bliss. Besides, in the past, I always tried to avoid conflict, Crystal. Amen to marriage being complicated. I stayed long after I should have left Jonah, but I didn't want to admit I'd made a mistake. But you weren't hypocritical. You were just dumb. Thanks, I guess, I mumbled. That sounded better in my head. I love you, and I'm not going to let you down anymore. I'm sorry I didn't tell you about Daddy. I still love him, and I'll call him occasionally, but I'm not going to hold my breath for him to love me back unconditionally. He's always had his way, except when you left him and when I refused to get rid of my baby. He's even more spoiled than me. Is that possible? I laughed. Barely, she said. But my eyes sure got opened the day I realized how low I'd sunk. I laid a hand on her shoulder. I'm glad you weren't too stubborn to come home. Home, she echoed. It's crazy, isn't it, Mama? I used to hate it when you made me visit Aunt Gert. This house gave me the creeps, and it smelled funny. She laughed. I raised an eyebrow. It smelled funny? Yeah, like a musty old cellar or soured milk. And it doesn't anymore? No. Now it smells clean and like fresh paint and varnish. Sometimes it's like Gert is here, but... She couldn't find the words to finish. I nodded. I know. I think she'd be pleased with what we're doing. Do you realize you always say we? That you always include Billy Lee in the planning and everything? She asked. I guess I do. He was there that day I found out about Charity, and he stood beside me through it all. Oh? I didn't find out about Charity because your dad slipped up. I was at Gert's funeral and overheard a conversation in the ladies' room about how stupid I was to let Drew get away with his infidelities. Later, Billy Lee and I were the only ones in the sanctuary, and he consoled me. Crystal frowned. You told him what you'd just found out? I patted her hand. Not about your dad. Billy Lee had no idea what I'd overheard, and I sure didn't blurt it all out. He was truly mourning Aunt Gert, and somehow that helped. I can't explain it. We were both miserable, for different reasons, but still grieving. He'd lost his friend and surrogate grandmother. I was about to bury a marriage. After that day, he became my best friend.
Wow. Is that the way it really was? I thought he'd been in love with you since you were kids or something.
Crimson filled my cheeks, and I stuttered, What made you think that?
It's the way he looks at you. Like you've got a halo hiding under all that curly hair. Like you couldn't do or say a wrong thing if you tried. If some fella ever looks at me like that, I'm going to have him in front of a preacher so fast he'll wonder how he got there.
You're thinking about trying marriage again in the future? I tried to change the subject.
Yes, someday, when I find a younger version of Billy Lee. But we weren't talking about me. We were discussing you and Billy Lee.
Then the discussion is finished. I'm 40, overweight, and getting wrinkles. Billy Lee isn't interested in being anything but a friend and good neighbor.
We'll have to agree to disagree, then.
Smart girl. She knew when to hold 'em and when to fold 'em. Right now, I had a mother who seldom had good days, an ex-husband who wanted to abort my firstborn grandchild, a pregnant daughter, and 3 new cats. I did not have time to deal with crazy notions about Billy Lee Tucker. Chapter 20. I woke up New Year's Eve morning with a chip the size of a 100-year-old pecan tree sitting on my shoulder. I didn't even know where the thing had come from or why. I tried to shake it off when I looked out the window into the beautiful morning. Bright sunshine poured into the bedroom, but my mood was as black as sin. My eyebrows lowered so fiercely that I was sure I'd given birth to a dozen forehead wrinkles. I forced myself to relax. Something had to have triggered the ugly mood. We'd had a lovely Christmas, and Crystal and I had cleared the air. We'd laughed over the Christmas slug and talked about her father and her future. So what was wrong with me? I hoped I'd shake it off by the time I got downstairs. I didn't. The kitchen was empty, but I could see Billy Lee and Crystal outside through the window. They were out beside his workshop with a steel tape measure and stakes, marking off where her new greenhouse would rise up like that mythical bird from ashes. Shouldn't she at least have to work at a job she hated for a couple of years before she got to dive right into her heart's desire? But no, only I had to do that kind of thing. I was always the good girl. Poor Trudy, bless her heart. I dressed in a pair of jeans and a sweatshirt and grabbed the car keys. Billy Lee and Crystal waved when they heard the engine, but I pretended I didn't even see them. I drove straight down Broadway to Main Street and made a right turn toward the nursing home. Mama was sitting in her recliner in her room. A rerun of The Golden Girls was on television, and she didn't take her eyes from it when I stomped into the room. I threw myself down into the other chair at the end of her bed, and she finally looked up. "Who are you?"
"Mama, it's me, Trudy."
"Get out of here before I call the police. I'm not afraid to dial 911.
"Okay, I'll go."
When I left, she was giggling at something Blanche had said. Why, oh, why couldn't she be lucid today? I couldn't take the anger home, but there was really nowhere else to go. I drove slowly all the way out to the Y where the highway split, one part going to Medill, the other to Ravia and Ardmore. I stopped the car at the Western Inn's restaurant and thought about going in for a cup of coffee, but I was afraid I might commit homicide if Drew happened to be in there. So I drove to the park across the Pennington Creek Bridge to where Billy Lee and I had gone to picnic that day in the summer. It was so cold my breath came out in smoky puffs when I got out of the car. I heard an old pickup rattling across the bridge, but I didn't look up until a door slammed. Crystal plowed across the dead grass with determination and more than a little worry in her eyes.
"What are you doing out here?"
Crystal sat down across the table from me. I shrugged.
"Tell me what happened."
I shook my head. How did I tell my child that I woke up that morning resenting her?
"What are you upset about?" she demanded.
"Be honest." It was as if Aunt Gert was sitting right there giving me advice. "It was there when I woke up this morning. I've loved you from the minute they laid you in my arms when you were born. But today, I woke up resenting the heck out of you."
Tears welled up behind her beautiful eyes and spilled down her face.
Why? I thought things were finally going well between us.
They are, but I'm mad because... I stopped.
You might as well tell me, she said, regaining her composure. We're doing honest, remember?
I sighed. Okay, honest it is. I wanted to wait for a baby when your father and I got married. I hoped to go to school and get a degree, but your grandparents really wanted a grandchild, and they pushed hard for that. I think they had visions of Drew going on to something big, like politics, and a stay-at-home wife and a baby would look good.
Dad's no politician, Mama. He's a small-town lawyer. Politics might have been the Williams' dream for their son, but Daddy never would have had that kind of discipline or drive. He was way too spoiled, and he is what he is.
How'd you get so smart? She smiled and reached across the picnic table to touch my hand.
Go on, Mama.
I went on. Anyway, we had you, and I loved you to pieces. But I guess I always felt I'd been cheated out of my dreams. I basically had to walk 2 steps behind Drew and cater to his every whim. Then, when you were about 2, I wanted another child, but your father said no way. I stopped. I don't know why I'm telling you this.
Because I asked, and because you resent me, she said honestly.
Oh, stop that. We both know I've always loved you, no matter how spoiled and demanding Drew and I let you become, especially when you were a teenager, though I pretended that that was just a phase. And I allowed it because I couldn't stand fighting. I love you, and you know that, and that's all that matters. Now let's go home. My stomach hurt, and I had a headache.
No, not until we've talked this through.
I can't.
Oh, yes, you can. Are you upset because of the baby?
It's not the baby. It's me. I'm 40, and for the first time, I have a life all my own, and now
I can get my own place. I don't have to live with you, she said.
I like having you live with me. I love sharing our lives.
Well, you have to decide. If I'm upsetting things in your new life and making you have these moods, then please tell me. Maybe you could give me a loan until I can get my business up and running. But if you want me to stay, then you have to remember that we're both adults now. You can come and go and do as you please. And you don't have to explain anything or answer to me or take care of me as if I was still a child.
That took me by surprise. My daughter was trying to meet me halfway, just as a grown-up would. I guess I'd figured she'd flounce back to Billy Lee's truck and throw gravel all the way home.
How are you going to manage with a baby and a new business? I'm going to be a mother who runs a business.
Her eyes glittered at the prospect.
I'll have a crib and playpen in the greenhouse, remember? That's the beauty of having my own business. I can do both. I'm not asking you to take care of me or my child, Mama. All I need from you is to always be my mother. A real one, not a perfect one. I don't even care if some days you hate me, as long as most of them you love me.
I almost cried at how smart and logical she had become. I stuck my hand across the table. Deal. She shook it firmly.
Now let's go take care of the rest of this.
Might as well finish up the year by throwing out the old and starting off tomorrow with a clean slate.
What are you talking about? Get into the truck. We're going to see Daddy.
My stomach did 2 flips and my gag reflex almost lost the war.
I can't. Let's just go home.
She opened the passenger's door of the truck and literally shoved me inside.
Nope. He's at Grandmother Williams' place, and you can unload on the whole bunch at one time.
Don't hold a single word back, either. cuss, rant, rave, even throw one of her fancy pants vases at him if you can get your hands on it. It'll cleanse the soul, believe me. Later, I'd wonder how she knew where Drew was that day. But at the time, I was so nervous over confronting him and my in-laws that I wasn't sure I could utter a word when we got there. Crystal parked the truck in the circular driveway as if it was a limo and jumped out, motioning for me to follow. I made it to the front door of the house at about the time she pushed the doorbell. The housekeeper, Elise, opened the door. Miss Crystal? Miss Trudy? Oh, my. My ex-mother-in-law, Ruby, peeked out the den door into the foyer. Who is it, Elise? Crystal marched right in, and I followed. Neither of you are welcome in this house, Ruby said. And Elise, if you let her in here again, I will fire you. When she does, come see me and I'll put you to work, I said.
Tell me why we aren't welcome, Crystal said.
Because you broke your father's heart.
Is he here?
I asked. We are all in the den, but you aren't coming in.
Yep, Grandmother, we are. Come on, Mother.
I followed her, even though Ruby looked like she was about to drop dead of a heart attack. What are you doing here?
Drew's eyes shot pure hatred at me.
Mama has something to say, Crystal said.
We don't want to hear anything you have to say, Ruby said. This is my home, so get out and don't ever come back.
You'd better sit down, because Mama ain't leaving until she speaks her mind, Crystal said.
Ruby pointed a finger at me, but she didn't sit down. You've changed. You are no longer the woman we chose for our son. You have been nothing but vindictive and mean.
Me? I've been mean? Lady, you'd better wake up and smell the coffee burning.
Your son cheated on me most of our married life. He's bought fancy cars and gifts for his bimbos, and even coerced his daughter into covering for him.
If he did those things, it was because you weren't a good wife. A man will find happiness, if not at home, then away from home, Ruby said. That lit the fuse and loosened my tongue. I slapped her finger away. I'll get to you later. I pointed a finger at Drew. I can't think of anything vile enough to call you Drew Williams. I was a complete innocent when we married, and Ruby's temper flared.
Don't you call my son any names.
One look from me, and she grabbed her mouth. I said I'd deal with you later.
This one is between me and Drew.
I raised my voice an octave or two, or 40. It sure felt good to be standing in her living room yelling like a fishwife.
He opened his mouth, but nothing came out. Like I said, I was an innocent and thought you walked on water. I ignored the signs right in front of my nose and didn't face up to what you were doing. Right up until Gert's funeral, when my two cousins came into the ladies' room talking about all your affairs.
How could you treat someone so badly? Why didn't you just leave me when you found out you didn't love me?
I never did love you. I never wanted to marry you, he yelled back.
Shut up, Ruby whispered.
Well, I didn't. I didn't want to be tied down to a wife or a baby. But Mother and Father thought I needed stability, that if I married, my law practice would be more solid. And it was. They were right.
So you stole 20 years of my life to make your law practice solid?
I shouted even louder. Did you ever give a thought to how I might feel?
I liked the way you took care of things, and you had a place in society. You had been trained well.
You really are a cold-hearted bastard, I said.
Don't you call him that, Ruby said.
I shook my head in disbelief. How could I have been so naive?
He's just like you.
Be careful, Trudy. She's my mother, Drew warned.
She had to have known what you were doing. Everyone knew. I didn't care what he did as long as he was discreet. I told him he could have all the mistresses he wanted, but he needed a good woman to serve as his wife. You were that, Trudy, until you went off the deep end, Ruby said.
What about you? Did you know? I asked my former father-in-law. He shrugged. I looked back at Ruby. I suppose you'd be fine with Andrew flaunting a mistress and you being the good woman to serve as his wife.
Get her out of here. She's nothing but trash, Ruby said.
I shook my head. I've said my piece. Now I'm leaving of my own accord. I marched out of the house. Crystal followed me. Feel better? She asked when we got to the pickup. You will never know how much. Thank you. Chapter 21.
A cold north wind stirred the lake into frothy whitecaps. Wrapped up in blankets, Billy Lee and I sat on the deck watching the old year die, after we'd feasted upon grilled steaks and stuffed baked potatoes. I loved the lake house, and could live there forever, if only Billy Lee would sell it to me. I was glad that Crystal had forced me to face my past, and that Billy Lee had wanted to drive the caddy to the lake house to ring in the new year. Peace reigned deep inside of me, in a way it never had before.
It's because we were raised only children, Billy Lee finally said.
What?
That's why we hate fighting. We didn't have siblings, so we could learn how to do it properly. But sometimes we don't have a choice. You feeling better or worse for clearing the air earlier today?
Much, much better.
Good. I'd hoped everything about Drew would go away and never bother you again, but that's unrealistic. You two share a child, so there'll always be that.
I suppose so. What time is it?
11:30. Another half an hour and this year will be finished. What's been the good, the bad, and the ugly for you this year?
He asked. I had to think about it for a while, but he waited patiently for my answers. The biggest ugly was the episode in the ladies' room at Gert's funeral, for sure.
And that was? He asked.
What is said in the ladies' room generally stays in the ladies' room. A guy would never understand. Still, I told Billy Lee the whole story, even about wiggling at the funeral and putting a hole into my pantyhose.
And you let them live, and even invited them to Christmas dinner? I always pictured you as a take-charge, don't-mess-with-me woman.
Billy Lee, you've pictured me all wrong. I'm a wimp.
A wimp wouldn't have cut her ties as cleanly as you did. So you didn't want to know what was going on. At least when you found out for sure, you didn't sit around moping and feeling sorry for yourself. You walked out and started all over.
But Gert made that easy to do, I answered.
You'd have pitched a tent alongside Pennington Creek and used a public restroom before you'd have lived with Drew Williams after you found out he was cheating.
How had this man come to know me so well?
The good?
He prompted. There had been so many good things. To list them would take more than the time I had left in this topsy-turvy world that had spun my life in a 180-degree turnaround. Good would be that Crystal and I are forming some kind of adult relationship, that Mama has had a few good days, and that we got to celebrate the holidays with her, that I've got a house full of gorgeous things, built by a new friend I cherish. Good would also be the mornings when I smell bacon and coffee as I stumble half asleep toward the kitchen. It's finding baby kittens and feeling safe. The good outweighs the ugly by far. He smiled.
The bad?
Today, I answered honestly. I hate confrontation. I still don't know how I had the courage or the anger to have that showdown with the Williams bunch. Dealing with Marty and Betsy was easier than that.
If you could go back and redo any of it, would you?
No.
We sat there a few more minutes before I realized I'd just bared my soul. Aunt Gert used to say that turnabout was fair play. So it's your turn, Billy Lee. The good, the bad, and the ugly of the whole year.
The ugly. The way people acted at Gert's funeral. She was a fine lady, and she deserved to be mourned properly. You were the only one who was sad. The good. Gert leaving you the house, so the hole in my heart was filled up again.
I was amazed beyond words. That was good in his eyes. He'd worked his fingers to the bone, and there was still work to do.
The bad? Today.
I raised an eyebrow. Why was today bad for you?
Because when Crystal and I came into the house and found you'd left without even touching your breakfast, I was afraid you'd gone back to Drew. It was a long day for me, until Crystal brought the truck home and told me what had happened.
He looked at his watch.
10, 9.
He tossed off his blanket and held out a hand. I pushed aside my own quilt and took his hand to go inside. We'd watched the old year ebb out into history as the birth of a brand new one came sliding into home base. He kept my hand in his and nodded toward the other side of the lake, where fireworks lit up the dark sky.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
He pulled me close and looked deeply into my eyes, a faint smile on his face. The man was going to kiss me. My thoughts were jumbled and my mind frantic.
1.
The kiss caused as many fireworks inside me as the ones showing their glory across the lake. Then he hugged me tightly and said,
"Happy New Year, Trudy."
My ears were ringing so loudly, I wouldn't ever be completely sure what I said, or if I said anything. He kept my hand in his. Surprisingly, it fit there, as if it had been formed especially for that purpose, and led me through the glass doors into the living room.
"Good night. Sleep well."
He leaned forward and brushed a sweet kiss across my forehead that was as passionate as the one on my lips. I closed the door to the bedroom, sank down onto the bed, and stared at the ceiling, looking for answers to questions I couldn't even form. I began to rationalize. Billy Lee had wanted the day to end on a nice note and had felt obligated to give me the traditional New Year's kiss. There were just the two of us at the house, and I'd had a bad day. He was a good man and an almighty fine kisser. I fanned my glowing face with the back of one hand. He'd made my toes, my lips, and everything in between tingle in ways it never had before. I wanted to kiss him again so badly. It was a chore to keep the bedroom door shut. The next morning, I awoke to the aroma of coffee and bacon, but dreaded leaving the bedroom. I dressed slowly, made the bed, and invented a dozen things to keep me from going out into the kitchen to avoid the awkwardness that was sure to hang in the air like cigarette smoke in a cheap bar. Finally, I opened the bedroom door and took a step out into the living room. Billy Lee was the same as always.
"Good morning. I thought I heard you up and around. Temperature's 40 degrees and the sun is rising, so we'll have a lovely day. What would you like to do with it?"
"Can we take the boat out and putter around the lake?" My voice came out sounding normal. Maybe I'd only imagined that he'd kissed me so passionately last night. Perhaps it was just a dream, and hadn't really happened at all. No, not even my most vivid dream was that real.
"Sounds like a plan to me. I'll leave black-eyed peas cooking in the crock pot, and we'll have them for supper. Have to eat our peas and greens today if we're going to have good luck all year. Did you bring a warm jacket? The wind can get cold out there on the water."
"I did," I said.
I'll take along a quilt, just in case you get cold, he said.
That was my Billy Lee, always thinking about me, and I loved it. I set the table for two and found butter and jam in the refrigerator. Billy Lee had already whipped eggs for scrambling, and biscuits were in the oven. I'd better eat a double portion of peas and greens, I mumbled.
How many did you eat last year?
Not a single bite, but I'm not jinxing what... I stopped. I'd almost said, what we have. I cleared my throat. I'm not about to jinx any good luck coming my way. We had breakfast, just as if we were at home in Tishomingo. We talked about the cabinets Billy Lee was finishing for the kitchen, and the stain we planned to use. A rich cherry finish. Not as red as mahogany, but something that would enhance the grain and go with the white marble countertops. I could already see starched white curtains on the windows and pots of herbs on the sills. It was as if we were two old, settled, married people. Only we weren't. And if that kiss from the night before was any indication of what being married to Billy Lee would be like, it would be far from settled, and there wouldn't be any dull moments. I wore a pair of jeans, a red turtleneck, and a zippered sweatshirt with a hood. The sun was warm, and Billy Lee tucked a quilt around my legs, so I was cozy as I propped myself up on pillows and read an old Laverl Spencer romance book. I'd read it at least a dozen times before, but it was like having tea with an old friend. Same friend, same tea, still good. I sneaked peeks at Billy Lee all day. His blue eyes were piercing, and I wanted to touch his hair. At that thought, high color flooded my cheeks. I felt like I was too close to an open fire. I went back to fiction. It was much safer than reality.
You want the new baby to be a boy or girl?
He asked out of the clear blue. I don't care which or one of each. It's been a long time since I've been around a baby. I'm looking forward to being a grandma.
You sure don't look old enough for that title, he said.
You are blind.
I wear contacts and they make my sight perfect. I'm excited about the baby. I looked at plans for building cribs this past week.
You do too much. He gave me another crooked grin and said,
I'll be the judge of that, Trudy.
Today, I'll let you be the judge, I said.
Be careful. What happens on New Year's is what happens all year long.
The kiss came to my mind immediately. I sure hoped he was right. By the time we ate supper and got back to Tishomingo, it was fully dark. Crystal had left a note on the refrigerator that she'd gone to the nursing home to visit Mama. With luck, she wouldn't be the cleaning lady that day, or worse yet, Marty or Betsy. Billy Lee said he had to check on his cat and headed out, leaving me to ponder the last 2 days over a cup of hot chocolate. Chapter 22. Men are so frustrating. Sometimes I think they really do come from Mars. That's the planet where they take boy babies' souls at birth to raise them with no feminine influence of any kind. They use John Wayne as the primary role model and make them mean and tough. Then they return their souls to them when they start puberty. That's why they are so obsessed with the female species at that time. After all, they've been living on Mars, where no such things exist. For a whole month, we went on with our routine. Billy Lee started breakfast every morning. Crystal and I meandered in when the aroma of coffee and bacon wafted up the stairs and into our bedrooms. She set the table for three. I helped Billy Lee finish cooking, and we ate together. He never mentioned that earth-shattering kiss on New Year's Day, so it must not have affected him the way it did me. I wasn't about to tell anyone that I dreamed every night of him kissing me again, or that when we were working side by side, I stared at his lips. On the first day of February, I awoke to nothing. No coffee. No rattle of pots and pans. I sat straight up in bed, My eyes opened so wide my face hurt. Billy Lee was dead. I was sure of it. Tears welled up behind my eyes and spilled over the dam into rivers down my cheeks. I brushed them away with the edge of the bedsheet. What would I do without him? And why hadn't I told him how much that kiss meant to me? I sniffed the air. Maybe I was getting a cold and couldn't smell the coffee or the breakfast. Nothing. Not one thing could keep Billy Lee out of the kitchen, other than death. So that was proof of my suspicion. I grabbed a chenille robe from the closet. The only socks I could find were two mismatched ones, a blue with navy stripes and a black with red hearts. I grabbed two house shoes from the floor of the closet, a Clifford the Big Red Dog and a Minnie Mouse. Peter, Paul, and Mary were all meowing in the utility room. Further proof that Billy Lee was in his shop, graveyard dead. He always fed them first thing in the morning. I ran across the yard, through the hedge, and to the workshop. It was locked up tight. I'd lived next door to him for months, and not once had I been in his house. But desperate times called for desperate measures. If he didn't answer the back door, I had every intention of breaking and entering. If he pressed charges against me, I'd pay the fine or sit it out in jail. Surely they'd seen women in worse attire than mine down at that place. I knocked. No answer. I tried the knob. It was locked. The windows were covered on the inside with mini blinds and curtains, so I couldn't see a thing. That didn't keep me from trying. Concerned neighbor? Peeping Tomette? Who cared what they called it when they came to haul me down to the slammer? I leaned on the front doorbell until the cat set up a howl, and still not a human sound came from within. I tried the storm door, and it opened, but the main door was locked. It was either kick it in, or the cat would begin eating Billy Lee by nightfall. Clifford the Big Red Dog was on the way to the first attempt when the door opened suddenly. I overbalanced, fell into the living room, and looked up at Billy Lee Tucker, alive and in the flesh. His voice came out nasal and almost whiny.
What are you doing?
He wore faded red flannel pajama bottoms and a long-sleeved gray shirt. His face was flushed, his nose red, and his eyes bleary. He might not be dead yet, but the devil was knocking on the door. I pulled the robe around my naked legs and stood up, tightening the makeshift sash. You look like the devil.
So do you, he said right back at me.
Yes, but I could get dressed and look better. You could put on a tux and still look horrid. He headed toward what I assumed was his bedroom.
Go away. I'm sick, and I don't want you to catch it.
He slammed the door. I heard a moan and bed springs. Standing just inside the living room, I took stock of the house. The living room was long and rectangular, with outdated furniture. The orange floral sofa, with a coffee table and end tables, were definitely not of Billy Lee Tucker quality. A matching chair with a side table and lamp seemed to date from the 60s. The only redeeming piece in the room was a nice big leather recliner facing a small television set. Meandering toward the back of the house, I found a kitchen with a U of cabinets, still not made or produced by Billy Lee, an old chrome table with a yellow top, and four matching chairs. The window above the sink looked out over the sidewalk to his shop. When I went back through the living room, I discovered a short hallway with a bathroom and two bedrooms opening from it. The bathroom door was open, and I loved to snoop, so I stepped inside to find light green fixtures, a wall-hung sink, and curling green-flecked linoleum on the floor. The spare bedroom invited me right in, where I found a bed covered with a white chenille bedspread, every inch of a dresser crammed with family pictures, chest of drawers with a brush and comb set, and nightstands with a Bible on each.
Billy Lee's grandparents had slept in this room, no doubt. I slung open his bedroom door without even knocking. When did you get sick? He pulled the covers over his head.
I told you to go away. I thought you'd left.
I snorted. I was snooping around your house. Now I'm going to make you some toast and hot tea. I'm not ready for you to die.
Trudy, trust me, you don't want to catch this. It's miserable, and it comes on fast.
His voice came out muffled from beneath the quilt. I jerked the covers back and touched his forehead. If I get it, you can take care of me. What have you taken? Tylenol? Advil?
Not a thing. I hate medicine. As it is, one minute I'm burning up, and the next I'm freezing. Add a bunch of medicine to that, and I'll be dizzy and disoriented, too.
Stop acting like a baby, Billy Lee.
Please, Trudy,
he said. No, even please won't work. I'm staying and taking care of you. I called Crystal, who was in the kitchen wondering where we were. I told her to look in the medicine cabinet and bring me a bottle of Tylenol and the vitamin C and leave both on the front porch. Then I told her to pack me a bag and to toss in a couple of books from the pile on my dresser. Keep those germs there, she agreed. I don't think I could bear to be sick now that the morning sickness has passed. Whatever you need, you just call and I'll put it on the porch, she said. Need? What I needed was to bear my aching soul to Billy Lee. But he had to be well first. Hearing what I had to say might shove him right over the edge into eternity. While I waited, I set about making a cup of my famous healing tea, 8 ounces of boiling water, a tablespoon of honey, and a fine dusting of ginger over the top. That, and 2 pieces of cinnamon toast, would be his breakfast. After he ate every bite and drank every drop, he'd have a Tylenol and 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. For lunch, he'd get homemade chicken noodle soup and more pills. For supper, it would be more of the same. And at bedtime, a cup of very sweet, hot lemonade. The doorbell rang. The ordered items had arrived with a note. I was to call after breakfast, and Crystal would make a run to the grocery store and check in on Mama. I changed clothes, and 10 minutes later, I was sitting cross-legged on the bed beside him, arguing over every bite or sip. I didn't care if he didn't like the taste of ginger, or if the toast had too much sugar on it.
You don't listen,
he muttered. And you are not a good patient. That tea and toast will keep you out of the undertaker's hearse. He sniffled.
I am not dying. I just want to be left alone, not badgered into eating and taking those stupid pills.
I handed him a tissue from the box beside the bed. Blow your nose and stop whining. I'm protecting my interests. If you die, I don't get my new cabinets. I didn't tell him my interest involved more than cherry stain and a new sink. He huffed and puffed, but he ate the toast and drank the tea. If this was what they taught men on Mars, I hoped my grandchild was a girl. Now get up and go take a shower, put on some lounging clothes, and meet me in the living room, I said.
I can't. I'll pass out in the shower, he groaned.
If you do, I'll come in there and revive you, I threatened. He almost grinned.
You are a drill sergeant.
You've got that right. You'll get sore and weaker lying around all day. You need to sit up. We'll read or watch television or even work the crossword puzzle in the newspaper, but you are going to get well. He narrowed his eyes at me.
Don't you touch my crossword puzzle. I'll take a lot of bossing, but don't you touch my puzzle.
I'll do the whole thing in pen and cross out errors and make a big mess of it if you don't get out of bed. He took a shower, shaved, and put on a pair of flannel bottoms and a shirt. He didn't faint dead away or even throw up the abominable ginger. He wasn't real perky when he plopped down on the sofa, but at least he wasn't kissing St. Peter's ring or having a discussion with Lucifer about air-conditioning Hades either. If a portion of his brain hadn't been fried with fever,
He probably could have finished the puzzle in 15 minutes without a peep from me. Have to also fess up that I could have been a bigger help if he hadn't splashed that good-smelling shaving lotion onto his face. My thoughts weren't exactly on the capital of Peru or Nigel Julio's nickname in a 1941 movie.
I'm feeling better. I'm going to get dressed and go out to the shop,
he announced a few minutes after we finished the puzzle. Over my dead body. You are going to rest for at least 2 days. Then we'll talk about it.
Who died and made you God?
Remember when I asked you that? You said Gert. Well, the same answer applies to me today. I shot right back at him.
Even Gert left me alone when I was sick, he snarled.
I'm not God or Gert. I picked up the remote and turned on the television. Jeopardy was just coming on.
Oklahoma,
Billy Lee said between coughs. What?
Oklahoma is the 46th state to enter the Union. After that was Arizona and New Mexico, then Alaska and Hawaii.
I switched my thoughts to the program. Oh.
What were you thinking about anyway? I don't even like this show. I thought you wanted to watch it.
I'd rather watch a movie. What have you got?
You didn't answer my question. What were you thinking about?
I told a white lie. The lake house.
Let's go to the lake house, and I'll sit on the deck and watch the sun come up and go down. I'll even let you drive the caddy.
Nice try. Let's talk, I said.
I'm sick. I don't feel like talking. It makes me cough.
Then we'll read. Or better yet, let's have a Lethal Weapon marathon. You own all four of them?
Don't own a single one. Don't even know what you're talking about. I don't watch much television, he said.
I went out to the kitchen and called Crystal on her cell phone. She was on the way to the grocery store from the nursing home. Mama was not having a good day. I told her to go to the video store and rent all four movies and leave them on the porch. And to also bring popcorn, a whole chicken, a package of noodles, and a gallon of vanilla ice cream. It's not fair. I'm stuck over here all by myself, and you two get to do a marathon? Lethal Weapon is my favorite. And now that I'm pregnant, that last item would be extra special, she whined. Rent two copies of each. And bring my new cell phone over. We'll talk later. Billy Lee chuckled. He was going to live. Life was wonderful. Chapter 23. I lost my nerve. Billy Lee was well, but now that I wasn't taking care of him anymore, I wasn't so brave about telling him how I felt. I was terrified he'd tell me that all he wanted to be was my lifetime friend and neighbor. And I wanted so much more. I wanted to open my eyes in the morning and see him all squinty, trying to focus on my face. I wanted to hear him tell me I was beautiful. February slipped into March. The crocuses and tulips peeked up from the frozen earth and put on their show. The kitchen cabinets were coming along very well, and the carpenters would start taking the present kitchen down to the bare studs in a few days. The greenhouse plans were finalized, and a crew from Oklahoma City would arrive the next day to start that job. We were in our normal routines and busy again. But every time Billy Lee was in the room, and that was every single day, I wanted to sit in his lap and kiss him. I was sitting on the back part of the porch watching the kittens, Peter and Paul, romp around on the porch. Mary had spent a couple of days at the vet, so there would be no more children for her. Peter and Paul were just little boys intent on biting each other's tails and ears. Billy Lee joined me on the porch swing. Sawdust clung to the legs of his overalls and his shirt sleeves. I flicked a piece from his left sideburn and asked if he wanted a glass of iced tea.
No thanks. Pretty day, isn't it?
Too pretty to be inside. Want to go to the lake house for a couple of days? I asked wistfully.
Got too much to do right now. Maybe in a few weeks. How do you feel about me, Trudy?
He asked. I was stunned into muteness. As in? Two words were my limit.
What do you mean?
He frowned. As in friend? Neighbor? As in... I managed a few more, but my mind was racing.
As in me? Plain old Billy Lee Tucker.
Billy Lee, there's nothing plain about you. You are a wonderful person, a devoted friend, who's brought me through tough times and made me feel alive again. A wonderful neighbor.
Is that all?
Why? I swallowed hard.
Because I've been in love with you my whole life. I can't remember when I didn't love you. I'm not so good with telling you romantic things that are in my heart. We can talk about wood or refinishing all day, but I get all tongue-tied when I start to tell you how I feel. But I love you with my whole heart. I've got an idea about something, but I want to know how you feel about me. I don't want you to like my idea just to be nice,
he said without looking at me. I felt as if someone had jump-started my heart with a set of those orange cables they use on a car. Electricity set every hair on my neck and arms to standing straight up. You love me? I whispered.
You had to know that, he said.
I've been scared to death that you were just going to tell me you just wanted to be my friend and neighbor. That our New Year's kiss was just because of the holiday, and... I ran out of breath.
So?
He asked, his voice barely above a whisper. Billy Lee, I can't say that I've been in love with you my whole life. But I can say that I intend to be for the rest of it. I don't even know when it happened, but it did. I can't get you off my mind or out of my heart, I said. He gave me his best crooked smile. His gorgeous blue eyes sparkled. Before I could open my mouth to say another word, he'd slid across the swing and proved that all his kisses would set my heart to singing. He finally pulled his lips away, but kept his arms around me. I laid my head on his shoulder. It feels so good to get that off my chest. I was afraid.
Hush, he said,
and he kissed me again. He held me tightly and whispered,
Trudy, I've waited nearly 40 years to hear you say that.
I took a deep breath. Billy Lee, are you going to ask, or do I have to?
Ask what?
If we're going to get married.
I've waited almost 40 years. I can wait until you're ready.
We're going to have a church wedding at our church. You know, at our church on Broadway Street. How about in 2 weeks? That'll give us time to plan a simple wedding, and the reception can be in the fellowship hall. I snuggled down into his chest. It fit there as if I belonged.
You sure you want something that public?
You are the man I've fallen in love with. I love you, and can't wait to be your wife. 2 weeks is my limit. He raised an eyebrow.
You plan whatever you want. I'll be there. I'd like a wedding at our church.
I cuddled down even deeper into his arms. Then I'll tell Crystal, and we'll plan it for 2 weeks from today.
Want to hear my idea now?
If it's got to do with more kisses, yes.
Actually, it kind of pales in comparison to our kisses. But I was thinking that maybe Crystal could have my house, and it would give her and the baby more independence, and I could move in here with you.
I love it. I pulled his lips down to mine. He hugged me tightly, and then we broke apart.
Where do you want a honeymoon? I'll plan that while you and Crystal put together a wedding, he offered.
The lake house.
Trudy, I can take you anywhere in the world. Name it and we'll go.
The lake house. And bring a do not disturb sign. He kissed me again, and I was very sure about my honeymoon.
Epilogue. We were married 4 years ago. Mama was good that day. Crystal served as my bridesmaid. I wore an ecru brocade suit, and Billy Lee wore the same suit he'd worn for Gert's funeral. We spent a whole week at the lake house. Billy Lee and I talked about children for 6 months and decided that we'd just enjoy our granddaughter, Malie. After all, we were both over 40, and Crystal was grown with a child of her own, so we made up our minds and didn't look back. It's said that when you set your plans in stone, God pitches in a monkey wrench to show you who's really boss. I thought I had the flu, then I thought I was going through menopause. Will was born the day we were married 18 months. Malie is 4 now. Crystal hired a local man named Joshua Valdez to help her in the greenhouse when the business took off. Like a bottle rocket, I should add. They had so much in common and became such fast friends while they worked together. It was no big surprise when they married when Malie was a year old. Now there's another little girl, Tess, over in the house next door. They talk of adding a wing to it, and I expect that'll be the next big project around here, since Crystal is pregnant again. So poor little Will tags along with those girls and does the best he can. I'm reminded of Billy Lee having to make do with me and my cousins all those years ago. Drew talks to Crystal occasionally. He isn't involved with the granddaughters and doesn't remember their birthdays or even Christmas. I don't think he'll ever change, but that's his problem. I'm too happy to waste even one precious moment thinking of him. Mama had a couple of good days after Will was born, and I'll always have those memories. But a year ago, the disease progressed to the point that she didn't know any of us anymore. She died in July, a few days after my birthday. And I miss her terribly. Lassie joined her 3 weeks later. It seemed fitting in a way, since they'd become such good friends. But losing them both so close together wasn't easy. Marty and Betsy come to holiday dinners. Both of them are recipients of the Gertrude Martin Divorced Women Scholarship. Marty owns a donut shop and has stopped smoking. Betsy has a flower shop on Main Street and buys her plants from Crystal. She made a gorgeous piece for Mama's casket. I think Mama would have liked that. At Crystal and Billy Lee's encouragement, I began to write in earnest. First, it was just a column for the local newspaper, and then it became syndicated. It's just about everyday occurrences that everyone has lived or will live through. It had all started that Christmas night I stepped on that slug in the kitchen. One day, I was writing a column about Thanksgiving when I remembered Aunt Gert's fussing at me for buying a turkey from the store, already plucked and frozen. A light bulb flickered a few times, then shined brightly inside my head. Until then, I thought she'd left her fortune to me, but in that moment, I realized she had done no such thing. In her own way, she'd left everything to Billy Lee. If she had left him the house and all the money outright, I never would have moved in next door to him and figured out that I loved him. She'd known I would find out about Drew eventually. I wondered if she'd put it into Marty and Betsy's minds to follow me into the ladies' room that day of her own funeral. I'd put nothing past her when it came to giving Billy Lee Tucker what he wanted. Billy Lee had once asked Crystal what her passion was, and she'd said she'd always liked digging in the dirt and growing things. She had then made her passion her success. We've all had our successes. Billy Lee's gorgeous furniture, Crystal and Joshua's greenhouse, my writing, Marty's donut shop, and Betsy's florist business. But none of that is really my passion. My and Billy Lee's passion is our love for each other. I will always be grateful to Aunt Gert for giving us that. And much as I hate to admit it, I'm also grateful for that day in the ladies' room. It changed my life forever. And for the best. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Ladies' Room by Carolyn Brown, performed by Donna Postel. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.